Do you touch my drum set?
No.
It's just weird, because seems like someone definitely touched my drum set.
Yeah, it is weird. Because I didn't touch him.
Hey! Did you touch my drum set?
Hey, knock it off!
I know you touched my drumstick. Because the left one has a chip in it.
You fucking crazy, man. You sound insane. Do you realize that? You should be medicated.
Fuck you, Brennan. I know you touched my drum set, and I want to hear that dirty little mouth admit it.
You get out of my face, or I'm going to roundhouse your ass.
You swear on your mom's life that you didn't touch it then.
I don't have to swear to shit.
That's because you fucking touched my drum set, because I know cops doesn't start till 4. Where are you going?
I'm going upstairs, because I'm going to put my nuts hat on your drum set.
We may not be perfect, but at least we know that the world has returned to its proper access, and Iowa is once again the superior football program in the Hawkeye State.
Little brother back on the bench.
Little brother is back on the bench, and let's keep him there for a while, huh?
At least another year. Got and then even more.
Two trophies in that case now.
That's it. So
got welcome. A friend for Floyd.
Yeah, Floyd's got company. Well, welcome to 12 Saturdays. I'm James Bladel.
And I'm Tori Brecht.
And we are... Are we celebrating? Are we reveling?
Well, the fact that, you know, I didn't have to kill a hobo and you didn't have to shoot yourself means that Iowa beat the Cyclones for the first time in 3 years, so.
What does it mean that we beat Iowa State? I was thinking about this. It doesn't mean that we're good.
No.
If we would have lost, we would definitely have been, you know, in a meltdown sort of mode.
Absolutely.
But winning doesn't really prove anything either, right?
Well, I think incrementally it does. Iowa State was not a good football team, let's right. be honest. But they're a BCS team. They play in the Big 12. It's on the road. They've historically had our number. They've been a thorn in our side for the last year. So what mattered to me the most about the game is that I think we're starting to see Iowa learn how to finish a game. It wasn't pretty.
No.
And they let up definitely on the gas a little bit there towards the end. I wrote about that in the column this week. But... You know, it's better than the alternative, right?
Well, I mean, the alternative is basically unthinkable at this point. I think that for a while we were starting to get kind of comfortable. We were joking around. We were taking it easy a little bit. And then, it happened again. The comeback seemed to be on. But I mean, you know, to their credit, the defense stepped up. We actually recovered. We recovered 50% of our onside kicks.
There you go.
So that's a good development. And pulled it out. I mean, you know, but at some point, I think it was, when it was 20-7, I started to feel pretty good.
Right. So here's the question that I posed in my column this week, and I'm curious to hear your answer to it. The seeing those same sort of bad things happen again, the not recovering the onside kick, you know, letting the receiver run wild behind your defense all of a sudden, you know, those are problems that we saw come back and bite Iowa in the past and that led to losses. This game, they overcame it and won. So my question that I pose to you, does that mean that that's a demon exercise that we've gotten out of our system? Or is it a sign of the trouble is still there and still lurking and it's going to come back and bite us?
Well, I think the trouble is still there for the onside kick. That still is way too frequently successful against Iowa. I mean, what is, in general, an onside kick? Didn't we look at this last year? It's 20% of the time or something like that.
Right.
Successful, but we seem to be about one out of four
now. Yeah. One out of the last four.
Right.
I think.
So that's a concern. The second thing, I think that we just have to chalk up I don't know if it's a lack of talent or just the lack of ability to finish a game or just the youth and inexperience, but it seems like our secondary is good for maybe one or two big plays in the passing game for the other team.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of, so I'll throw it back to you. It seems like we're starting to develop an identity for this team, which is offense, you run first, you wear them down with a running game. But defense, try not to get into too many passing situations because they will burn your secondary once in a while.
Here's what's interesting to me, though, is that if you look at it, we are now, I think, the Hawkeyes are now stopping, they're producing more three and outs. So we're doing a little bit more blitzing. We're doing a little bit more pressure. So I think what we're seeing is instead of the Norm Parker kind of bend but don't break the whole time, we're kind of a more risk-taking defense. Mm-hmm. So we're going to force some three and outs. We're going to pressure some quarterbacks, but that leaves you vulnerable to giving up some of those big plays, which you didn't. So it's really kind of a change.
That first touchdown was a blitz.
Right.
We got burned on it.
Right. So it's a little bit of a change in philosophy. It's sort of a roll of the dice. And, you know, that is something that fans have wanted to see. So I think if you're going to push to get some more of those three and outs and be a little more aggressive on defense, you're going to have to get used to the occasional getting burned. There's always a give and take to anything in football.
Well, I think fans wanted it both ways. I think they wanted us to be aggressive on blitzes but never get burned.
Right. Be aggressive and have it work every single time.
Exactly.
But that's what fans do, right?
Exactly. The secondary, to me, is the concern. I think we're starting to see a pass rush. We're definitely starting to see a defensive line that can stop up a run.
Mm-hmm.
The linebackers are playing at an entire level. They're carrying that defense.
They might be the best in the Big Ten.
I think you may be right. It really boils down to, can the secondary just become adequate?
Mm-hmm. Well, and here's an interesting fact, and trust me, this team in no way compares to the greatness of that team. But if you remember, that was kind of the Achilles heel of the 2002 team. Remember, they were breaking in those real young corners.
Jovan Johnson, Antoine Allen.
Right, exactly. And so, you know.
They had Bob Sanders back there, too, so that helps.
That helps a tremendous amount. But it has been shown that, you know, Iowa doesn't necessarily have to have the killer secondary to be successful if they can also control the clock, put some points on the board, and do what they need to do on offense.
And generate a pass rush.
Right.
And I think that's, if we can put together a more consistent pass rush, I think the problems in the secondary will, I don't want to say go away, but they will be compensated for.
Right. Well, no secondary can cover for ever.
Right.
I mean, you see it in the NFL. When teams don't rush, you get picked apart. I mean, no matter if you have, you know, Darrell Revis or Deion Sanders as your cornerback, you just can't stay with them.
Speaking of secondaries, did you see Iowa State kept trying that little throw to the flat that we hate?
I'm telling you, I watched that, and that play, I hate it. I really hate it.
It doesn't even look like football anymore.
The little sideline flare, and it's a run play, basically, but there's so much that can go wrong with it. And you always have, you know, one blocker against two defenders, and the guy with the ball is supposed to make a guy miss, but more times, it just, I hate it.
I did see it work, was it the Seahawks?
It works once in a while, but it's just risk reward to me. It's a trendy play now, but it's not one that I like.
Yeah.
I'd rather run it into the line and get stuffed.
Yeah.
Frankly, at least you can't, you know, have that intercepted. I guess you could fumble.
I suppose. So I mean, but overall, it was a good victory. I mean, considering the alternative, I think that what do you make of this story that coaches and players' personal effects were stolen. Did you hear this rumor? Is this for real?
Well, no. I mean, it's true. There was a police report and everything.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, it'd be fun to sit and make fun of Iowa State and say they're, you know, half-assed, you know, security and it's a podunk town and whatever. But, you know, I think stuff like that happens. So.
Okay, but I'm just saying, in Kinnick, if you and I were to, you know, wander into the wrong door, I would fully expect to be tased.
Well, you know, if you think about it, there's probably somebody in there. They hire a rent-a-cop security firm, so my bet's on somebody from the rent-a-cop security firm being the culprit, would be my guess. So
what do you think about the offense? Let's talk about that. I mean, we talked about the defense and overall. Is the offense learning?
You know, I don't think this game is a good measuring stick for that because, you know, you kind of knew going into it after you and I had rushed for over 200 yards on the Iowa State that it was going to just be ground and pound. And I personally love it. I mean, when you can see offensive linemen imposing their will and running back like Mark Wiseman just continue to grind out yards and pound people down into the dust, you know, I enjoy that kind of power football. You know, I know it's boring to some people, but I like it. But I don't think Iowa had to do much offensively. They didn't have to get creative.
Well, there was that one drive, I think, that ate up about 7 minutes and resulted in points. And I think a lot of folks were tweeting that was a backbreaker type of drive. Mm-hmm. And I just love that because you knew, I don't remember the statistic, it was something like, you know, 18 plays, two of them were pass plays or something ridiculous like that. It was completely imbalanced. You knew, they knew, everybody knew what we were going to do, and yet they couldn't stop us. And I think that is, it's demoralizing to a defense. It's demoralizing to a fan base because that's what everybody did to us last year.
Exactly. But I will say, you know, Jake Rudock did make a couple of really nice third down conversions, third and longs on one of the touchdown drives. And, you know, I don't feel nervous when he goes back to pass like I did at a lot of times last year with Vandenberg, where you just were like waiting, what bad is going to happen here? I feel like his poise and calmness and confidence gives me more confidence as a fan to expect a better outcome.
So we're already three games into the season. You're saying you like our sophomore, was it sophomore?
Redshirt sophomore.
Redshirt sophomore quarterback this year better than our senior quarterback last year? Or you have more confidence?
I have more confidence. And I don't think that, and that's not to take anything away from Vandenberg. You know, I feel bad for Vandenberg in that I think having to switch coordinators and go to a new system and deal with all of that issue and not have a great, you know, supporting cast around him as well that he was familiar with, I think, you know, helped lead him to really have shaky confidence and not be the quarterback that he could have been. I don't think he could live up to his full potential. He was much better as a junior, as a senior, and I don't think his physical skills eroded. I just don't think he didn't have enough time in the system to really get it down. And then you're in the middle of a season with the bullets flying and things are not going your way. It was just a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, somebody, I'm kind of now borrowing a little bit from the discussion of your column, somebody wanted you to call out the special teams. So since the question was directed at you, I'll go ahead and answer. I think the kicking game, at least to the place kicking for Myers, is pretty solid. I think everything else is a liability at this point, whether you're talking about coverage or punting. Everything else is a question mark.
Coverage especially is perplexing. Yeah. I mean, not staying in lanes, not getting, you know, and that's not like Iowa. They're usually pretty fundamentally sound. They don't seem like they usually give up a lot of kickoff return yardage and punt return yardage. So that has me concerned. Cornbrath is still, you know, hit or miss, you know. I mean, he'll boom one once in a while and he shanks one once in a while.
I think it's more shank than boom, though.
But, you know, it's interesting that, you know, they do have a new special teams coach this year with a pretty good pedigree. I think he was the assistant special teams coach for the Minnesota Vikings. So,
yeah.
You know, not to beat a dead horse, but I think it's execution.
I don't know. I think, for me, the only thing we can really say that we can hang our hat on in special teams is place kicking. You know, everything else seems to be a little questionable.
Mm-hmm.
I get very nervous about punting. I do believe we're due for a block.
Yeah.
Which makes me think, remember we used to make fun of Michigan? I think it was in 2003 was when we first saw that formation where they had the three.
And then their little rugby run out.
Yeah.
All that.
And we used to make fun of them. But now that I think that more teams have adopted that and we've seen more film on that, I really don't think that formation lends itself well to blocking. I think you'd have to just send too many guys to overwhelm that little wall.
Well, especially considering our punt returners are only going to fair catch it anyway, no matter what. I mean, it's not like you need to set up a return, right?
It's either punt to them or fake it at this point. But I think I would be a little more concerned about the way that Iowa State was able to get some pretty solid kick return yardage. I think that was a concern.
Right. Well, they did have a good kick returner, too, so let's tip our cap a little bit.
But we're going to see more of those in the Big Ten.
We'll see more of those in the Big Ten, so that's definitely something they're going to have to get squared away. But in general, I get more of a sense this year that we might be back to seeing that familiar pattern of Ferentz teams where there's gradual and continual improvement throughout the season if injuries don't hit.
Yeah.
And that's another thing we haven't talked about a lot. You know, we have not been hit too badly with injuries
this
year.
True.
I think they're getting two of the.
Should we knock on something?
Yeah, we're gonna knock on. I do think we're getting a couple of our defensive backs back this week.
Yeah.
To play too. So.
Well, and that's a concern I think coming out of a lot of the press conferences. As folks are saying, how many games a season can you run Wiseman 30 mm-hmm. times? And the answer is, well, hopefully just a few more.
Right. Well, you know, then all the internet. Hen peckers will get their wish and we'll get a full dose of Jordan Kanziri and LaShawn Daniels, you know, It is interesting, though, that Ferentz really is kind of that old school coaching mentality of run them till they drop, right?
Kind
of. Plug the next guy in, you know? Yeah. He even brought out in his press conference today the old, well, the ball's not that heavy quote when they asked him about how many carries Weissman could have.
Yeah.
So,
you know, as long as it's if it keeps, and I think that we're seeing this now with Greg Davis, is if something's working, keep doing it.
Feed the beast.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, let's, you know, there's no... We don't want to sound like we're perfectionists here and we're moping. There's a lot of gnashing of teeth and hand-wringing on the internet boards about we didn't beat Iowa State by enough, or we let him back in late or whatever. But, you know, we won on the road against a rival. We got a trophy. We covered the spread. I mean, really, what's not to love?
Well, and the thing about it, too, is you and I were talking when the game ended about our friend that's not a Hawkeye fan. It watches games with us. That was one of those games where, as I said, an impartial observer is, what are you guys so worried about? I mean, do you know how many crazy things would have had to go just right for Iowa State and wrong for Iowa, yeah, for Iowa to lose it? And we're like, yes, we know exactly.
We know. We saw them last year. We right. saw how the crazy things line up. So let's toast this one.
Absolutely.
And move on to our expert.
Our new segment here called Ich bin ein Expert. See, Eric is one of the few that actually gets that reference, Jim. So our guest this week is a friend of mine from childhood, growing up in the great state of Wisconsin. But he's not a Badger fan, so we don't have to hold that against. So I guess you are a bit of a Badger fan, but you're not real serious about sports, are you, Eric?
By default, I am a Badger fan, yes.
So, has anybody stopped talking about the ending to that ASU game yet?
Yeah. Actually, a lot of people don't want to talk about it. So, in truth, yes, they have stopped talking about it. They're mad they stayed up to watch the end.
You know, I actually stayed up to watch the end of that, and I was outraged on behalf of the Badgers myself. It was that was just ridiculously stupid.
I was on Facebook chat with my niece, who I think, you know, it's hard to tell sometimes by just the keyboard, but I think at some point she was just pounding her fist into the keyboard. So, but Eric has a fairly unique area of expertise or hobby, something I'd never actually even heard of until you mentioned it, Tori.
Yeah, that's right. So, Eric, why don't you tell the 12 Saturdays listeners, you know, how you spend some of these cold fall weekends up there in Wisconsin?
Well, in actuality, it rarely seems to work on a weekend, but I like to ply the waters of the Great Lakes for waves. I consider myself like... I still consider myself a hunter, but I'm a freshwater wave hunter because the oceans are just too far to go to.
So Eric is a freshwater surfer, and is there like an actual like association or group that you belong to?
Over the years, there have been a number of kind of, I guess, really loosely knit associations. The longest standing would be the Great Lakes Surf Organization, association, I should say, and... But it really, it's more of, I don't think cult would be the right word, but it's close to it. Just a lot of guys who stay connected because of, you know, the power of social media and cell phones. You know, it started being able to see forecasts on the internet and check buoys that are out in the Great Lakes on the internet. And it's just kind of gone on from there. So there is a pretty large group of people, I guess, if I measure it from when I started surfing on the Great Lakes, it was roughly 1999, 2000. And it's not just that I know more people. I know a lot more people have gotten into it.
So when we were young, you know, I remember you liked to skateboard. You and I skied a lot, downhill skied. I know cross-country skiing. So you've always liked outdoor sports and things like that. How did you get introduced to surfing, and how did you kind of learn that this was even possible? Because I don't think a lot of people realize that's possible.
Did you live on the coast or something, or visit there and say, hey, I think I want to do that on the, you know, Kenosha?
Yeah, not remotely. And it's a funny story, I think, because – When I was 2 years old, my parents took me on a trip to Grand Cayman, which is not known as a surf destination. It's usually pretty tranquil, pretty calm water. But while we were there, there was unusual weather that created pretty much constant surf. And my parents have always told me the story how I would not go from one building to the other outside across the beach without go see Big Wawa. I had to go see all the waves. I had to see the big water. So I think I became a surfer at the age of two. Or at least I wanted to surf starting at the age of two. And then I was introduced to waves, to riding waves, on another trip to the ocean when I was 13. It wasn't until I was in my mid-20s on a camping trip that I woke up and I just heard a sound that seemed strange in Wisconsin, but I was on the coast of Lake Michigan at Point Beach State Park, and I went down to the water and looked at it, and I said, wow, this looks like the ocean. I didn't have anything with me to ride waves on, but it didn't matter. I, you know, plunged into the water and tried to body surf.
What did, was it a storm, or what was causing the surf on the lake?
It was windy out over the lake, but the winds at the shoreline were actually somewhat offshore. So you wouldn't have expected, or at least I didn't expect, waves of that size. I mean, they weren't big. Surfers always argue about how to measure waves, but they were maybe 3 foot. But they were very well formed. And they weren't like lakes, waves that you see on a lake typically, real choppy. They were long lines, like corduroy. And it just looked like the ocean, sounded like the ocean. But it didn't taste like the ocean.
Well, that was my next question is, is there anything with technique or equipment or anything like that that says, hey, this is fresh water? I'm guessing it's less, like, buoyant.
You're right. It is definitely less buoyant.
So what do you have to do differently that ocean surfers would just take for granted? That's maybe it's harder work to surf on fresh water?
Yeah, a little bit thicker board. And once you're up and moving, you don't really notice the difference in buoyancy at all. It's negligible. But when you're sitting still, fresh water is definitely less buoyant, and you can tell. So a board that would keep me kind of up and out of the water in the ocean might actually keep me partially submerged in the lake. Another big difference is because of the relatively small fetch or distance that the wind travels across the water, the waves don't have time to spread out as much. And the longer a wave travels, the faster it goes. So they don't go as fast either. So overall, lake waves are slower and harder to catch.
So they're smaller, they're slower, and harder to catch.
And you forgot the best part is that the time of year when the most surfing on the Great Lakes occurs is?
Probably late fall through the winter.
But so you also have to dodge, like, big chunks of ice.
I stay out of the iceberg waters myself, but there are guys who brave it. And, the waves have to be really good. I do not like getting hit on the head with that cold water.
I'm guessing
I do want to correct something there, because there are, yes, lake waves probably can't get as big as they do on the ocean. But there's days where I had to find shelter. I just wouldn't go out at the spot that I had planned on because the waves were too big, too out of control.
So what what would be considered like the ideal size of a wave on Lake Michigan, and how many times a year might you get those kind of conditions?
I think most surfers would agree that the best conditions come from, they usually measure it by how high on your body it is. Like if someone out in the water is watching you surf a wave in towards shore, they can only see your head, or they can only see your shoulders, or they can see your waist. So you say waist high. Anything bigger than waist high, chest high to head high is ideal. And then most importantly is if you can find a place where the waves are coming into shore and the winds are going out to the lake. And those conditions happen Well, I guess it could happen, you know, a few dozen times a year, but not everybody, especially someone who's landlocked like I am in Madison, can make it to each one.
Right. So you're like about 75, 80 miles away from the lake, right? And so you keep like a weather radio on you. You're sort of like a volunteer firefighter in a way. You're like prepared to go at a moment's notice, aren't you?
My beeper goes off and I just drop everything and... Just like a doctor in Caddyshack, you know, I just have to go.
Well, what, is it only Lake Michigan, or do you surf like Superior or any of the other lakes?
I myself have only surfed Lake Michigan so far. And I've done it only on the, well, no, I shouldn't say. I have been around to the east side of Lake Michigan. But I haven't been north of Door County. I haven't been up to, you know, like upper Michigan to do it. But there are surfers on all five Great Lakes.
Is there something special about the, like, you know, Michigan's kind of a north-south lake.
Oriented.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if that, but Superior's bigger. So, I don't know, does one of them, do any of them have, like, a reputation for being better than the others, or?
One of the best photographed waves on the lakes is Stony Point, which is just north of Duluth. And so there's a pretty good-sized population center. It's not that hard to get to. Very, very picturesque wave. The conditions there get optimal many times a year, and most of them being in winter. But it stays ice-free there in winter quite, you know, I think because of the constant wave action. But I would say overall Michigan gets the most waves because of that north-south orientation, that long orientation. You don't have to have winds blowing straight north or straight south to take advantage of that. They can be blowing at angles to it, and you still get waves going all the way up and all the way down the lake.
I think I need a Surf Duluth January 2012 t-shirt or something like that. I mean, that just blows my mind to think you're surfing in Duluth, Minnesota in the winter.
If it's January in Duluth, I think you're walking on the lake.
No, I don't think so.
Right. No, they've got something that they hold in June called the Cold Water Surf Fest, which I think is stolen from something out in Santa Cruz. But those guys are definitely the most hardcore that I know. You know, some of them bring campers to the shore, you know, keep the heater running in there so they can run back up. A lot of times they'll build a fire on the shoreline. But I've got pictures that are just surreal from up there in February where they said that air temperature was like minus 15.
Oh my
God. That's without the wind chill. And if there's waves, there's wind.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. So what, have you had any bad spills, accidents, scary moments?
I had my leash break at a pretty rocky break, a break where there's not a lot of sand. It's bedrock on the bottom. And the board went all the way in, so I had to swim in. But, no, I'm pretty safe. I took, like, life-saving classes back in the Boy Scouts, and I try not to surf alone. Nothing too scary.
Well, how dangerous can it be? I mean, it's a lake. It's not like the ocean.
Yeah, exactly.
I always think that when I travel a lot for work, and I fly in and out of O'Hare, and I always come in out of, you know, the lake, and I just look at it sometimes, and I'm like, I can't believe this is a lake.
Yeah. No, I think that on Lake Michigan alone last year, there were over 70 drownings that were attributed to rip currents.
Wow.
Which are a direct result of wave action. And that attitude that people have saying, oh, you don't have to worry about it, it's just a lake. I've found that the lake can be a little more intense than the ocean, not because of wave size, but because of wave frequency. The waves are coming in a much shorter period than you experience on the ocean typically, like every 7 seconds versus every 14. And not having time to recover in between getting hit on the head with waves or trying to dive under them really wears you out. So I think the biggest danger probably would be exhaustion and hypothermia.
Yeah, when I was 10 or 11, we were on a camping trip to Door County, and I actually started to get pulled out by a undertow type of situation, and my dad had to come out and kind of rescue me. So, yeah, it can be a little hairy out there on the lake sometimes.
Were you at Whitefish Dunes?
I think we were, actually, yeah.
That's a notorious spot for strong rip currents because of the shape of the bay.
What were your parents doing, taking you 10-year-old out to the notorious rip current beach?
They were trying to kill you.
They
may have been. Well, that's true, because I remember one time when we were up at Lake Superior, my mom kept throwing a stick in the water, making me swim out to
they
get
wanted
it like
a dog.
So you know.
They got a son. They wanted
the dog wouldn't do it anymore.
Exactly. But Lake Superior is cold in August. I mean, I can't even imagine what it's like in February. So
yeah, Lake Superior is wicked. But you know, the western shore of Lake Michigan, because the winds are typically out of the west, a lot of times the warm water that was up on top blows over to, you know, the east shore over on the Michigan side, and the cold water from down below comes up. So Labor Day weekend, we were dealing with temperatures like in the mid-50s until an east wind came around and blew some warmer water back in. And then in overnight, the temperature came up like 15 degrees. I think it came up to 68 or 69.
So what is the area you surf the most? What town's it near? Sheboygan?
I would say, yeah, Sheboygan and anywhere from there south to Racine, I would call that my kind of home turf because it's the shortest drive from Madison. But I have ventured south of the Cheddar Curtain and surfed down in, not Chicago, but I went through Illinois and got to Indiana, and I've been over in Michigan. Door County can be really nice, but it's extremely fickle.
So, and you've got your family involved as well, your kids?
I'm trying, yeah. I think Tori coined it best when we were talking about skiing once. He said, you got to create your ski buddies. So I'm trying to create my surf buddies. And it's actually a lot easier on skis. I've got the whole family skiing last year, but surfing, it's going to take a little bit longer. It's a little more difficult.
Well, you know, best of luck with that. I know that, you know, getting your kids into your hobbies is the best way to ensure that you get to keep them.
That's why I have my son drinking beer now.
Exactly.
And he's 11.
I know. I'm going to teach my kids to gamble. Well, thanks, Eric. I mean, this is fascinating. I had no idea that people even really did this, let alone all of the considerations that were involved. But, you know, it makes sense, I guess. I mean, Tori and I live on the river. And, you know, the Mississippi, and we've seen some pretty good chop on it. Nothing like you see on the lakes. Of course, in the summertime, the water temperature is usually in the high 80s, so we don't usually complain about that. But it makes sense that a bigger body of water would actually be surfable.
Yeah, I never thought it was possible. And to some extent, I would call it an outlet for my fascination with weather that I've always had. Now I've got a reason to constantly pay attention to what the weather's going to do. But you know, it's also borderline obsession.
Well, like all good hobbies. So, two things. One is I will put some pictures up of freshwater surfing on the 12 Saturdays blog.
And how do you get there?
BulliesoftheBig10.com.
Okay.
So people can look at it. So if you want to send me a few more, Eric, that would be great. We'll put them up.
We have to.
And then second of all, even though I know you don't pay a lot of attention to college football, one thing that we always force our guests to do, no matter what their expertise is to make a prediction for the score of Iowa's next game. And I know you don't follow Iowa at all, but we're going to put you on the spot and tell you that Iowa is playing the Western Michigan Broncos.
Which is over by the surf area.
Which, yeah.
On the Western Shore.
It's Kalamazoo, is it?
Grand Rapids?
I don't know.
I don't know where it is.
But anyway, I'll let you know. Iowa actually is 0-2 all time against Western Michigan by a sort of depressing and sad statistic. But they have not won a game yet this year. Iowa is 2 wins and 1 loss. So tell us who you think's going to win and a score, please.
I think Iowa's going to eke it out. It's going to be 24-17.
All right.
Okay, that's good.
That's a reasonable guess.
And you're basing this on just
being nice. That's what he told me to say.
Awesome.
There you go. Well, thanks so much. This was a fascinating chat.
I love this. I got it.
Most people want me to shut up when I talk about lake surfing, so thanks for giving me the opportunity.
I actually want to try it now.
Well, we should go up there.
We should go up
there. Get a couple wetsuits.
January
is warm right now. This is the best time of year to try.
By warm, what's the temperature?
It could be 70. Mm. You can truck it.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the other question I was going to ask you. What percentage of the time would you say you have to wear a wetsuit versus not having to wear one?
Well, I'm pretty skinny, so I pretty much always have to wear a wetsuit.
No, I may have to take him up on that sometime. That's pretty amazing. I used to play around in the water when I was, you know, younger. Spent some time in California and some other beaches, but never would have thought Great Lakes. So
you've been missing out on Sheboygan surfing all this time.
Surf Wisconsin. All right, thanks, Eric.
Thanks, have a great Eric. One.
Thanks, guys.
I mean, I kind of had an inkling that freshwater surfing existed. I think it was because, isn't there like a tidal thing that happens in the Amazon that people try to jump on like once every
I don't know
month?
About that. Yeah. But I'll tell you a funny story about the day I met Eric, actually, when I just moved to my new neighborhood in Madison. And I knew him. He was a year older than me, so I kind of knew him from school, but I didn't know him real closely. So I went to his house because I knew he lived down there. He's like two houses down from me. And I ring the doorbell, and he comes to the door, and he's literally scabbed from, like, his chin down to his ankles. And I'm like, dude, what happened to you? Well, we lived on this hill, and it was, like, a gravel, like, kind of aggregate kind of surface. And he was skateboarding in just jean shorts and nothing else, and hit a rock and just skidded
because
his whole body.
It was the 70s, and that's what you did.
Actually, this would have been the early 80s, all right. But... same kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I guess, he actually was just a human scab when I met him. So he's always been a little bit of a risk taker and into those extreme sports, I guess.
More power to him. You know, I always admire folks who can do that. I can't. But he did call for a Hawkeye win this week, mm-hmm. as we look into Western Michigan. Is that right? You said we were 0-2 against them. I know we're 0-1.
0-2.
We didn't. Well, I didn't. When was the last time we saw them besides 07?
I think it was in one of Ferentz's first seasons.
Okay.
Yeah.
But didn't we beat them then?
No.
Wow. That is another monkey that's got to get off the bat.
I mean, this is setting up to have the potential to be a little bit of a season of redemption to exercise some demons.
To beat the mid-level Mac school in Kinnick, that redemption.
Frickin' baby steps, man.
Exactly.
Iowa was 4-8 last year. Yeah. You know, you can't take anything for granted. You have to learn how to walk before you can learn how to run, right?
Well, what do we know about Western Michigan? I mean,
we don't know where their school is located. We demonstrated that in the last
demonstrated a complete... ignorance of their geography. It's probably a big school too. I mean, Michigan
sure
or in Ohio, you've like, oh, I've never heard of that school. There's only 20,000 people right. there or something. The thing I was remembering, they played two Big Ten schools already. They've lost to both of them, mm-hmm. but those were pretty solid schools, right? It was Michigan and Northwestern.
Michigan State and Northwestern.
Yeah.
And Michigan State really struggled to move the ball against them. But if you recall, Michigan State is probably even more offensively challenged than Iowa is from the last season. Yeah, but they were playing the Sisters of the Poor week. So,
okay.
But, you know, it was interesting during his press conference this week, Ferentz had mentioned, it was asked, I think, by one of the Gazette reporters about the seemingly shrinking gap between the MAC and the Big Ten.
Right.
You saw Akron, who has not won a road game since 2008, I think I heard on the radio today, put a scare into Michigan and was a fingertip catch away from beating Michigan at the Big House.
Right.
Obviously, Northern Illinois has already beat Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was kind of asked why, and, you know, it's because it's good recruiting territory where they are. You know, you're talking Ohio, Michigan, that area, Pennsylvania,
Illinois.
And, you know, as Ferentz pointed out, they actually, for a while there, had more professional quarterbacks, NFL caliber quarterbacks, than the Big Ten was.
Remember,
producing.
We have to play Roethlisberger every
year. Oh, sure, absolutely.
So
yeah, and so
there's a good story there, by the way. When I was heckling him in the 03 game,
mm-hmm.
and he actually heard me when I called him Rottenberger. It was when he had his third pick, and I was kind of heckling him a little bit. But that's a story for another day.
But anyway, you know, I think Western Michigan is one of those teams that you have to have a certain level of respect for. They, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to play some good football. They're not going to be intimidated by coming into a Big Ten team, you know, stadium. And this might be that less and less.
Might be the easiest Big Ten game on their schedule.
Well, here's what sucks is, once again, I was reading in an article that they have this game circled. Like I said, Iowa's got to be the crappiest team that people circle. Now, what's funny is I think people used to circle us because they were trying to emulate us. Now they look at us and exactly what you said. Hey, we're going to beat a Big Ten team this year. Northwestern, oh, they're pretty good. Michigan State's pretty good. Iowa, we can beat them.
Yeah.
So, you know, once again, you know, we're the circled game. But, you know, so far I think we've done it well. Okay.
Yeah, no, so.
Not so great, but.
Well,
we were circled for them. We've been circled for everybody so far.
Well, the season is fairly young. I mean, you know, from what I hear about them, the strength of that team, particularly on defense, is their secondary. So we're not going to throw it around on them. So I think that suits us. You know, if we can run against these guys, their secondary can, you know, be full of, you know, all Americans. Mm-hmm. We're going to pound the football up the middle. So, I don't know. I think that. In some ways, our offense lines up well with their defense.
When you have to think at this point, Iowa's got to be just ripe to get a nice long play-action pass at some point. I mean, I was calling for it there probably incorrectly at times.
We didn't need it.
Near the end of the Iowa State game. But, man, you know, you just keep showing that same look, that stretch play and the, you know, the other plays that they were doing. And, man, something's got to come off that because, I mean, those safeties are just crashing in.
If you're getting 4 to 7 yards a carry. Just keep it up.
Yeah,
so.
No, that's for sure.
So, do you want to try and make a prediction on this one, or what are you thinking?
Yeah, you know, I think I was actually, up until the stupid onside kick recovery, my prediction of 28-10 last week was looking like that was going to be right about in the right range. And then, of course, you know, the special teams let down, blew that away. So I'm feeling pretty good about my prediction so far. I think I'm perfect, right? Because I picked NIU, I think, didn't I?
I'll have to go back.
I think we both did.
I think we both picked. We haven't disagreed yet.
No.
So I think we both picked NIU. We both picked Iowa over Missouri State.
By way too large a margin.
Yes. And then we both picked Iowa over Iowa State. I think because of the onside kick and the late touchdowns, I actually got closer.
Right.
I think I was saying 27-24 and 27-21.
Yeah, you were good.
Fairly close.
I'm going to say I think Iowa's going to score more this weekend being at home and having the running game. So I'm going to say that I think the defense, I heard that they have a nice quarterback and some decent receivers, so you might see another breakdown or two in there. So I'm going to go 31-20.
31-20?
Iowa.
I'm going to get something close to that. I'm going to say 28-21.
Okay.
Again, a one-score game. Again, we're there till the fourth quarter, biting our nails.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's just because I think both offenses line up with each defensive weakness. You know, that if they're able to throw the ball against us and we're able to run against them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that overall, we just run more, we control the clock more, and we burn it down. Right. So I think we beat them. I think we exercise the MAC demons. And I think that then we exit the non-conference season, you know, a fairly respectable 3-1.
You know, when I said
3-1, yeah, 3-1, right? Yeah.
And I said I thought we'd probably be 3-1, and I said that I would trade a Northern Illinois loss for victory over Iowa State. So, am I ecstatic? No. Am I satisfied? I think so. If that's how it ends up.
Well, now that is a great segue to something I wanted to talk to you about, which is the goal for this year is bowl eligibility, right? I mean, at a minimum, 6-6 shows improvement.
Right. Absolutely.
So. If we come out of this season 3-1, or I'm sorry, the non-conference, and we go into the conference schedule 3-1, where are those next three wins coming from? And that is something I'm struggling with, Tori, because I will tell you, Purdue is probably the easiest on the schedule. Would you agree with that?
No, I think probably Minnesota.
Okay, I was going to call Minnesota second. So can we agree that those two
probably? You know what I like about our schedule, though, is that the one game that we're almost certainly have no shot in is Ohio State, and that's on the road.
Right.
Okay. Some of the teams that I think we would have very little chance at on the road, but maybe can eke them out at home, are Wisconsin, Michigan, and Northwestern coming into Kinnick. You know, I think we can win one of those.
So my question
is, I also think we could beat Nebraska on there. I mean, I think there's three wins in there. I don't know which ones they are.
Well, and that's kind of where you're teeing me up very well here. My question is, if we get Minnesota and we get Purdue, Mm-hmm. Where's the sixth win?
I would not be shocked by a win over Wisconsin. We saw Akron almost beat Michigan. You know, Northwestern Iowa is almost always close, you know.
What about Michigan State?
We beat them last year at their place. Yeah. We'll play them at home this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look at what's happening in Nebraska. That's something I wanted to talk to you about. I mean, are they even going to have the same frigging coach when we play them on Black Friday?
What the hell is he doing?
I mean, would you go tell your fans to F off and they're all effing fair weather effers?
That was from 2011.
Yeah, I understand that. But, you know, holy moly.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
And, I mean, I agree, but I think it was Mark Morehouse that wrote that it was pretty chicken crap of that whistleblower or whatever to turn that in.
Yeah.
Just waited for the right moment. And that is pretty weak sauce. But at the same token, you know, as Ferentz said in his press conference today, you've got to, as a public figure and a coach, you've got to just assume that everything you say is on the record. Unless
Absolutely.
You're, like, in your own house talking to your own family.
If you're talking to your wife and 50% of the time she's not on your side.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. I was shocked by that. And I think somebody else, it was somebody, one of the CBS reporters tweeted about that. And they're like, Bo Pelini on how to get fired midseason.
So, you know, if that program spirals into some kind of bizarro, weird world. I mean, they have no defense. They didn't have any defense last year.
Yeah.
Iowa almost beat them last year. So, you know, am I saying all these are going to be wins? Absolutely not.
I'm putting you on the spot, though. Which one is our sixth win?
You know, I don't know. Because last year I would not have predicted Iowa to lose against Purdue and beat Michigan State in East Lansing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's too unpredictable because of the way Iowa seems to play right at that margin all the time.
All right.
I mean, all I know is I'm pretty sure Ohio State's going to murder us. I thought Michigan was, but now I'm not so sure. You know,
Wisconsin looks pretty freaking good, too.
I was hoping with their new coach that they'd be a little weaker, but boy, their offensive line
Wisconsin
is just maulers.
Wisconsin plays very, very athletic, but I'm starting to think kind of stupid football. You know, and then, you know.
But their quarterback's not going to scare anybody.
No, exactly. That Stavi guy.
And they have one wide receiver that's any good. Now, granted, he's really good.
Yeah, he's really good.
But he's one guy.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Ohio State, Michigan, Northwestern, you got to chalk those up as losses.
Most likely.
Yeah. I think that the sixth win is going to come from that group of Michigan State, Nebraska, and Northwest. Purdue and Minnesota, I'm counting as
okay.
You have to, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to get to six wins, you got to come up with three.
So you're just saying one out of the three of Wisconsin, Nebraska, and Michigan.
Wisconsin, Nebraska, and Michigan State.
Michigan State.
Yeah.
See, I don't know.
And I'm saying that Ohio State, Michigan.
Well too.
Ohio State, Michigan, and Northwestern, I'm saying, are probably.
Gotcha.
So any win there,
yeah.
Michigan or Northwestern, and I'm giddy.
Right.
Right, because we're way ahead of schedule there. So,
right. It's a daunting task.
It is.
But
six wins looks tough. Seven wins looks, I mean, I got to be honest, even this year, seven wins looks maybe out of reach.
Seven wins would be a very pleasant surprise for this team and a sign that Ferentz is getting some of his real magic back, I think.
Yeah.
Which could happen. It's happened
sure.
before, you know?
Well, we are fans, so we can look ahead. But he will tell us. One game at a time.
One game at a time.
Stuff to clean up, execution, get better every week. What
There's
else?
No doubt.
That's football.
That's football.
All right. Well, with that, I guess we'll just close for this week and go into Western Michigan. I'm looking forward to at least one more nice day up at the stadium.
You know, it's interesting to me that you said looking forward to because I was thinking, you know, that win against Iowa State. Here's another thing of what it means. I have been looking forward to going up to this game already all week since Sunday.
Yeah.
And I woke up on Sunday. I'm like, man, let's get to Kinnick. Let's go. And man, I miss that feeling.
I woke up. I was like, what is this? Is this only Tuesday?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Let's get up there. Let's get going.
And like when we were saying at the end of last year, it felt like a job.
So that's
being
a
fan was a job.
It's an excellent point. Maybe since coming out of the Minnesota game last year that we are actually, excited about and anticipating about a home game and not looking, you know, just to go up there and kind of bite our lip and get through it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That'll come later.
Well, when we get into the conference. All right. Well, so we have our records, everybody picking Iowa.
Yes.
And we're, it's not supposed to be too warm.
No, like low 70s. No, the rain's supposed to be done. It's supposed to be like a gorgeous September day, so about time.
Well, then you can't order up a better day to finish out your non-conference.
Heck no.
All right. Well, with that, I'll say on Iowa.
Go Hawks.